Hello and welcome to Film Monk. This is Glenn. I'm here with Daniel.
Hello.
And we have just come back from seeing Paranormal Activity 3, the latest entry in the vastly profitable Paranormal Activity franchise, started by director Oren Peli. And this latest installment was directed by Henry Joost and Ariel Schulman, the directors of Catfish, the acclaimed and mysterious documentary that played to wide acclaim. Daniel, you and I have both seen the previous Paranormal Activity films.
Sure have, yeah.
Sort of a basic premise for those of you who are new to the fun and games, as our friend Nick was, who came with us, especially the first one he'd seen. Katie Featherston is the name of an actress who was in the first movie and is also playing a fictionalized version of herself in the... I say fictionalized, but it's found footage. She's been stalked by a demon since she was a child, and various men who've come in and out of her life have attempted to capture this paranormal activity on tape.
And it has not ended well.
Okay, so we're not really gonna get into spoilers for the first two Paranormal Activity films until later on,
right?
Because this film actually takes place in Katie and her sister Christy's childhood, primarily.
Right, they're about 10.
Yeah, they're probably younger than that, maybe.
Well.
Katie is older than Christy. She's the older sister. She is the one who would grow up to be the subject of the first film. And it's them being stalked by this demon, and their stepdad has taken an interest in what's going on, and has set up all these old timey VHS cameras. And
right, he's trying to figure it out. And
well, I mean, we keep going further and further back with each one of these films. So, I mean, I almost, you know, what's going to be next? Is it going to be like they're on a film set and they're shooting with like 16mm and
right? I don't think it's going to go any further back. I think this is the prequel to set the stage.
No. The very last one is going to be a silent film,
okay,
in black and white, starring Katie's grandmother.
And it's going to be really scary. There'll be no dialogue. We're going to see text on the screen. We'll all freak out.
Well, yeah. Then you'll see a munchkin hanging in the background, and no, it's a different movie. Anyway, so these films are highly atmospheric in nature. They're all it's basically the equivalent of walking through a haunted house just on film. It's staring at a frame in which it's entirely static because it's on a tripod and we're just watching people sleep for the most part.
Right, very normal.
And all of a sudden something is abnormal. Something creeps around the camera, a light fixture starts swinging, or somebody starts doing something very strange. Like
standing over a bag for hours.
Here's my feeling on this movie. I think I would have enjoyed it more if I hadn't seen the first two films, because it at least tried to be innovative. It tried to do a few new things, but it definitely relied on a few of exactly the same shots that were in the first two films, like the one you mentioned, the use of time lapse, which was innovative in the first film. It was even used well in the second film, somewhat, but. Somebody standing up out of bed and standing somewhere for several hours at a time as we see the clock fast forward on the
it's
on the bottom
right corner.
It's creepy, but like we've seen it at this point. We expect it at this point.
Right.
And what I found myself feeling more than usual with this film was, all right, let's just get on with it.
Yeah, there were several extended shots where I was a little bored.
Well, there was a device that gets used in the film that's kind of, I think it's technically innovative, because this is meant to be an amateur-ish wedding videographer, and he sets up this little home rig with an oscillating fan to basically rotate a camera back and forth. So there are extended shots where we either see something begin on one side as it's panning away and we see nothing happening on the other side, or just little bits of where something changes as the camera pans back and forth. And I think there were parts where that was used to great effect. But given that the scares tend to sort of escalate in these films, the use of that was pretty uninteresting to begin with. And there were extended shots where you were just kind of staring at the screen and nothing was happening.
Yeah, they're trying to build tension, but... Because we had seen the first two movies, we're like, okay, we understand what they're doing.
Yeah,
here.
The door's gonna shut, and we'll see shadows, and
let's just get, like you said, just get on with it. Like, let's just see like someone get ripped out of a bag or something to move the plot forward.
Yeah, because I mean, we know it's coming, and I think that without getting into the specifics on this, the first two movies, the plots integrated with each other in a way that I think that the ending of the second movie revealed new things about the first movie, and that's kind of what I like to see. But I think the mythological connections between these movies were more interesting between the first and second than between the third and any of the others. I mean, it seemed very disconnected.
I still have a lot of questions.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, it ends rather abruptly. We won't say how it ends, but we're left kind of with certain assumptions about what could be happening next or how this ties into the other films, but really nothing has been resolved.
We get, I guess, a basic background as to how the first two movies came to be, but at the same time, like, there are so many questions and confusion. It's like, we could go all the way back to the beginning. We got basically to the second act.
Yeah, kind of. I mean, the girls have an imaginary friend named Toby. And it becomes obvious very quickly that this is the same demon from the first two movies. Right. But it's
he has the same sort
but
of
he's not and... he's not malevolent yet. The girls actually kind of like him.
Well, the little like, girl, Christy.
That's true. Christy, that is an important point, actually. Christy is the one who's seeing and communicating with Toby. Katie doesn't believe he exists, or at least refuses to believe that he exists. Yeah, it's tough to evaluate a horror film, because especially one that relies so much on building tension, because I think this film, in a vacuum, in the absence of the first two films, would have been incredibly effective at building tension. But in a greater sense, it almost felt like a remake of one of the first two films.
I liked it better than the second film. I think the second film had too many characters. I think this film...
The second film, which revolves around the sister, Christy's family, as she's grown up.
Right. There's just too many characters. It gets a little bit too wonky towards the end. But
yeah, I'm going to be honest with you. I barely remember the second film. I remember certain shots from it. But
well, during our spoilers phase, I will educate you because I remember it.
I do remember the manner in which it ties into the first film, and that made me like that film more than I would have otherwise.
Right. The ending was strong enough, as wonky as it was strong enough to save the movie from being kind of a failure in my eyes, as opposed to the in comparison to the first one, which I thought was brilliant.
Yeah, I mean, I think that there are only so many different ways you can have a door move on its own, or have a shadow move on its own, or do little things like that without...
There's only so many things in a house that can move or smash or fly up in the air. So they've gotten to the point where they have to do something really, really big to shock and scare us.
Well, it's interesting. I made this point, I think, in reference to an episode of Lost. or it might have been some horror film, but basically the idea of your fingernails getting something messing with your fingernails, or breaking your fingernails, or shoving something underneath your fingernails, just that is a method of inflicting pain, as we've seen depicted countless times. I think the reason that causes such a visceral reaction in people is because for most people, for people living normal lives who are not subject to extreme degrees of violence, that is the worst pain they will ever experience, is something happening to their fingernails. Fingernail getting ripped off, something getting shoved underneath there. In normal everyday life, that's what you're going to experience. That's going to hurt you substantially. But I think that I'm getting back around to the point here. So
come on now.
So I think that what these films attempt to do is what I've referred to in previous podcasts as the horror of the mundane. It's
right.
You take something that's so normal, like going to sleep at night when all your defenses are down. You know, the outside doors are locked, but these people they've all got families. They all sleep with their inside doors open. Sometimes deliberately, so that the camera can get views into the hallways.
Well, and the kids got to come in if they have a bad dream.
Yeah, of course. And
the demon tries to kill them or something.
Yeah, and these are always big open houses with just lots of stuff to move around. But just the idea of a house with its lights off and stuff being creepy and moving around, it's also normal. It's also,
and these people are very wealthy, so there may be some viewers who might be like, "Yeah, they're the 1%, like the stuff demon."
I mean, the boyfriend in the first film, like it's two 20 somethings that are able to afford a house and ostensibly that he owns.
Mika's a Logan.
Yeah, but it's, I mean, honestly, that just makes it make a little more sense that he's able to stay home all the time and record these.
Yeah, I don't recall what things he did, but
we don't even find out what this guy Dennis does in this film. This is the girl's stepdad. It's sort of implied that we find out that he's a wedding photographer or a videographer.
Yeah, I think he edits wedding videos.
But you know, the grandmother expressed some concern about that he wasn't financially stable, that he couldn't support the kids. This is not even the girl's father. This is their stepfather. The real father is out of the picture, and we don't know if that's related to the overall mythology of the film or what. But I think that the guy who played Dennis, who was a no-name actor as far as I know.
He did a good job, I thought.
I thought he was fine, yeah. This is an actor named Christopher Nicholas Smith, and I think he was fine. I think the child actors were fine. In fact, actually, particularly the girl who played Christy, I think she did a fine job. And all of the scenes in which she was talking out loud with Toby were appropriately creepy. And really just big problem with girls that age is half the time you can't understand what they're saying.
Yeah, I think the first time she really talks with them, I had no idea what she said.
I think that was somewhat by design. I mean, she was speaking very quietly. Yeah. We were just meant to be creeped out by the fact that she was having a conversation with a non-entity.
Which, but, I mean, when I was that age, I had an imaginary friend. His name is Fred.
Excellent. Is he here with us now?
Yes, actually. He has lots to say. you know, and I don't know. It's a normal thing for kids to have an imaginary friend.
Yeah.
I think Fred was in my life for about 2 weeks, and then he decided to move. He never called.
Did Fred ever rip your covers off your bed or drag you out of bed or throw you around or anything?
No, but it's normal for kids to talk to imaginary friends, which is why the mother dismisses it in the beginning of the movie, saying it's a perfectly normal thing for kids to do.
I will say this. The movie was structurally, it went out of its way to prevent the mother from ever seeing any concrete evidence of what was going on until she absolutely needed to. I mean, there's a scene where she and Dennis are arguing, and she's basically saying, you know, I don't want to do this anymore. I want you to, you know, stop, put the cameras away, right. Stop recording us, which, you know, it certainly implies a degree of trust for her to allow her boyfriend, I guess, to record her little daughters and stuff. I mean, this movie could easily have gone in a whole different creepy direction with that, but you know, he's completely innocent.
Right.
I don't even think that's much of a spoiler. He's such a normal guy.
He's supposed to be like Mika, except that he's not an arrogant rat bastard like Mika was.
Yeah, he's inquisitive. Like, look at that. That's amazing. Like,
and Mika was arrogant and like, I don't want to deal with this. Not my house. You know,
yeah.
How powerful are you, demon? You know, like, he was provoking the demon, and you know, this guy doesn't.
This guy was not. Yeah, he was largely just documenting. There's a scene where they're kind of yelling back and forth, and he's about to show her a video which shows incontrovertible proof of something paranormal happening.
There's something in the house.
But then, of course, something happens with little Katie in the other room, so the mother has to run off. Of course, she has no interest in seeing the video at that point. So, and then, of course, as all things do, all secrets are eventually revealed. She finally sees the true nature of what's going on. And I think that moment, without getting into what it is, was pretty awesome.
That was my second favorite scene in the movie.
Yeah, I mean, I think it sort of quasi-duplicated something that happened in the second movie, but
yes.
it did it in such a way that I think was kind of ingenious.
It was better than the second movie. I know what scene you're talking about.
I think
it did a better job because I think it raised the bar a little bit.
Initially, it appears that nothing is abnormal.
Yeah.
And then you're like, wait a minute, there's something wrong with what I'm seeing here. And then all of a sudden it becomes very apparent what's wrong.
Yeah.
I think we're kind of dancing around a couple of spoilers.
And we're not very good at it.
So we're going to go ahead and get into spoilers. So from this point on, don't listen unless you want to hear the ending of Paranormal Activity 3.
As well as the mythology.
So Dennis bites it, as we knew he would.
Yes.
And horribly, of course.
Right.
Like a contortionist getting snapped in half. But yeah, it's so I guess the ending, as we're meant to believe, is that what Toby wanted was to marry Christy, the little girl, the youngest one.
But I think he marries Katie.
I think he ends up marrying Katie. But I think that was as a result of the events of, I should mention, we're going to spoil the first two films as well here.
Right.
So it's spoilers for all of the Paranormal Activity films are coming up. So I think what we're meant to assume is that originally the demon was going after Christy, the younger one.
Yes.
And as a result of the end of the second film, in which they ostensibly sick the demon on Katie instead, I don't recall how they did that exactly, but it was.
They do like a rite. Like some sort of right, and they're able to push.
Yeah, which actually her husband figures out. He's like, "Yeah, we're gonna sick this on your fucking sister," because it's either that or our family gets
right.
We learned that her grandmother, who looked a little creepy at the beginning, but I thought that was just, you know, creepy casting on purpose. But she's a full on witch.
So the grandmother sets up this deal with the demon that for some price, the family will grow wealthy. For some,
maybe that is what it is. We don't really know what benefit she gets for this.
Yeah, in the second movie they reveal that the family grew enormously wealthy.
Yes,
or at least wealthy, maybe not enormously, but they grow wealthy over a deal with the demon.
Okay,
and but
In exchange for the firstborn son.
In exchange for the firstborn son, which confused me as to why this wedding was happening in the third movie.
I think what it was, because we hear the grandmother encouraging Katie and Julie's mother, or Katie and Christie's mother, I should say, which is Julie, played by Lauren Bittner. We see her encouraging her to basically have more kids. Like, don't you want a son?
You always wanted a son.
And to that end, find a man who's got a little more money, can support a third kid or what have you.
Right, I mean, that house is too small for
indeed. They seem to be doing okay for themselves. Yeah. But so basically, because there's no son, the demon doesn't want the daughters, except in that when one of them eventually has a son, which, as Christie does in the second movie when she's grown up, then that son can be taken away, which is what we saw at the end.
And we don't know why, whether he wants just to be a father or he wants to eat the son or...
Well, in the same sense, we don't actually know because Christie marries Toby at the end of this movie, ostensibly, because there's some sort of ritual happening outside the house. We don't ever really see what it is, but there are a lot of creepy old women involved.
There's a fire going on.
Yeah, there's a coven there.
And there's a coven there. which, by the way, that was the creepiest shot in the movie. When he opens the door, and there's just a bunch of old women, creepy old women staring.
Just standing there in the dark.
Yeah.
So ostensibly she marries Toby, but are we meant to believe that her son in the second movie, the little baby, was fathered by this demon? Or,
I don't think so.
Or was fathered by her husband and is now owed to the demon as payment?
I took it more as the latter. Okay. It's owed to the demon.
But I think we're inferring a great deal here. Now, to evaluate this film by itself, I think this is something where, we could crawl around the fan forums and probably find plenty of explanations like this, but I think that this ending is far from clear on its own.
Right. We don't understand exactly what the demon wants, other than he feeds on fear, which we learned, but we kind of figured that anyway, as they get more and more
frightened. That's a really generic descriptor for a demon.
Well, as they become more aware that he's there, he grows more bold.
Yeah, I mean, we've seen a pattern of this over the course of the series, of just him tormenting them in escalating ways, and they start off pretty benign, just moving stuff around and things
like that. But question, wouldn't suit the demon's needs more quickly if he just possessed one of the girls from the get-go instead of, escalating with, these scare tactics and silly, like, ooh, I smashed a pot on the floor, or...
Well, yeah, this is another one where we see Christie get up out of bed and walk into the parents' room and stand there for several hours and time lapse, but, okay, is she possessed then? As we're meant to believe is what happened with Katie in the first movie?
Maybe he has to, when he possesses a body, he has to kind of get used to it.
I guess, but he doesn't, there's no clear indication that he possessed anyone in the movie except for we see him possessing Katie at the very end of the film, which is just kind of sitting there huddled. We see her turn to the camera and then throw Dennis across the room.
Right, and breaking his leg.
He was dragging himself across. I assumed something broke.
A whole lot more broke.
Yeah, I mean, I guess I don't really have much to say about the ending of this movie beyond that, because the ending was kind of far from clear, deliberately so, because they're setting up the next movie. And this one made $80 million in its opening weekend.
I have a problem with how they're doing the series. Basically, I like some sort of closure in movies, and I like, look at the Star Wars movies. They have an ending for each movie, and while the second movie, leaves a lot open for the third movie, there's endings there. You can see a story being told. Because we went from the first two films now doing a prequel, now I don't know where the story's going. Are we going to see Demon Katie with the baby in the next movie?
There's no investigation going on here. Dennis and Julie, the parents, are never permitted to know what's going on with their children. Dennis knows something is going on and he's trying to capture it on film, and he suspects what that something is malevolent. And it turns out he's right, and it kills him. But that by itself is not a story. That's like a detective story where there's a murder, and we think that we're being targeted by the murderer, and then the murderer shows up and kills us, and we don't know him, we don't know what his nature is. That's not a story in and of itself.
Sorry, I cut you off. No, but do you remember the daughter from the second movie?
Not especially.
Okay, well, she figures out what's going on, but she's not killed. Maybe she's watching the tapes.
And she's like a teenager, right?
Yeah, she's a teenager. Maybe she watches the tapes. Because who's watching the tapes right now besides us?
That's true. That's the thing. We see the tapes get delivered to Christie's house.
Right.
At the beginning. And then we see subsequently in 2006, the tapes are stolen by somebody, by Katie, by the Coven, who knows? This is ostensibly before the events of either of the first two films.
That's true. So who's watching the tapes?
Yeah, who is watching the tapes? And also, like, this final tape, which depicts Dennis and Julie being killed, which was in the grandmother's possession, why did that tape get out? Why didn't the grandmother just destroy it?
Why did the grandmother allow her daughter to be killed?
That's a good question. Maybe she wasn't useful anymore.
Because she's not producing a son?
I guess, yeah. I mean, at this point, Dennis walks up the stairs and we see her just being suspended in midair, like hanging.
Like haunt, yeah.
Like she's been hung, but nothing's holding her there. She's just in a very, very creepy shot. I loved that. And then she gets thrown at the camera.
Yeah.
which we've seen also.
This series enjoys doing.
We don't know why she was killed. We don't accept ostensibly that her child daughters are more useful for producing an eventual offspring than she is, but it's... I don't know. It doesn't really fit with the rest of what we see. I mean, this is a coven. It's a group of old women. Why didn't she want to involve her daughter in it? Maybe her daughter's a willing participant in this. Maybe her daughter could have become part of that coven, even if her girls would eventually produce a son for this demon.
What? I mean, the coven doesn't seem wealthy. Why are they involved? Why does it matter?
I guess. We don't know the answers to any of these questions, and we're not going to get them in this film, or I suspect the next one. I mean,
right, and they're going to keep going. It's going to be like the Saw movies where, oh, he shit out more tapes. Let's watch him. Oh, there's another Saw game going on, like across the street. Oh, no, they're all dead.
I think the difference between this and the Saw films is that the Saw films imply a degree of master planning that becomes increasingly implausible as the series goes on. What this has is a malevolent demon that is affecting an increasing number of people as the film goes on. We learn the increasingly twisted backstory of these girls that grow up and have these horrible things happen to them. But apart from that, it's a demon. It's this malevolent entity. I mean, we can watch it torture humanity an endless number of times. I'm sure that's what they're counting on for this as a horror franchise. But at a certain point, it's going to lose all interest.
Right. I enjoyed this movie, most of it anyway. But like, remember when Mika puts the powder down?
Yes.
And then you see that.
And then we see the footsteps. Yeah. There was nothing that with that level of innovation going on in this film.
Yeah. Like at least that was, okay, we're learning a little bit more about the demon. We learn nothing more about him other than he marries one of the girls.
Yeah. I mean, I think at a certain point, the demon, even though he's this invisible entity, is going to be no different than Freddy Krueger or Jason Voorhees. I mean, he's just going to be this thing, this invisible force.
I thought the point of the prequel was to see how it all began. And like I said earlier, it feels like it was already in the second act.
Yeah, I mean, I think that this series does a very good job of depriving its characters of any agency, any control over their lives, because this thing is manipulating them. It's their puppet master. And I think for this series to go anywhere narratively, at a certain point, its characters have to be let in on what's going on and have to be able to fight against it. Now, I don't know if there's any way that can not be hokey. The most successful depiction of that I've ever seen was Drag Me to Hell. And that movie was as much a comedy as it was a horror film.
It was more of a comedy than a horror film.
The idea of fighting a demon is kind of hokey, so it's...
No one thinks, like, let's get some holy water and bless the house or something. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. We see the beginnings of an attempt to fight this thing in the first movie when the demonologist shows up, which is one of the most frightening scenes in that movie.
Because he freaks out immediately.
He freaks out, and that part was very well acted, but we don't really get any equivalent of that in this film or...
So not only do the characters not learn very much about the demon or what's happening to them, but the daughters, I guess, have their memories wiped as to like the fact that their mother was killed.
I'm reluctant to say, do we need an explanation for why their memories were wiped? Because the last time we got something like that, it was X-Men Origins Wolverine. But I don't think we needed that. But I think a more definitive ending, which explained a little bit something more of what was going on in that final scene. I mean, so much of what was happening with that ending was happening off camera, which in a sense is more realistic because this guy's willingness to hold on to the camera while terrible
uncanny
things were happening was already unbelievable enough. Yeah. So, I mean, at a certain point, obviously, he had to stop and be killed. But we needed a little more. That's all
right.
I'm saying.
And I enjoyed it. It's very much more of the same. Some of the scares, I guess, they work pretty well. I still think the first movie was far superior.
Yeah. I mean, with the original ending, which would not have prompted this this franchise.
The original ending
not gonna
that defeats the whole idea of a series because it's a story.
Well, yeah, with the original ending, the demon leaves Katie just in time for her to be killed by the cops because she's holding the bloody knife that she used to kill Mika. And it was very
poor,
it brought
poor
closure.
Mika.
Yeah, poor Mika, but actually with that ending, poor Katie.
Yeah.
Yeah, at this point, you know, I'm curious what's going on. I may come back for another entry just for more information, but I'm not. But my expectations for this franchise have dropped significantly. So
yeah, I was disappointed after the second movie, although I thought they had some things that worked well with it. I thought some of the big scares when like the entire room explodes basically were
when all the drawers and cabinets open up. So the equivalent of that we were talking about was
everything
when
in the room.
Everything in the room disappears in one shot. Like, it pans away, pans back to the kitchen. Everything on the counters, even the dining room table, is gone.
It's like they moved out.
She walks back in, and like initially we don't realize what's
first
happening.
Split second, first split second.
Oh, wait, wasn't there a table there? Yeah. And then everything drops from the ceiling, and it was
great.
That was fantastic. But I think that's really all we're going to have to say about this series going forward is what were the best scares, and I think this movie was definitely showed that they're starting to strain this format. There's only so much you can do with this format, and they're going to try and continue to innovate, but they're probably going to run out of ideas.
I mean, what I would do if I were them is end this series on the fourth one. Have the daughter from the second movie find some way to fight this thing, bring a camera with her, sure.
Sure.
And do battle with the grandmother, who I think is already dead. Yeah.
Yeah, she was pretty old in 1988, although unless this was all like to extend her life or something.
Right. I thought it was to get wealth. I thought that's what they said in the second movie, but
I don't know. I mean, I think for all the praise that I give the second movie for how well it tied into the first one, the very little bits of plot that were there were pretty forgettable.
I think the guy, the husband, owned like several Burger King franchises.
Yeah,
and he was like a district manager of some kind.
That's called product integration.
Yeah. Burger King. So that's how he had wealth.
But it turns out he was telling a whopper. And he actually sold his soul to Toby the Demon.
No,
just an adorable name for a
Toby.
For a demon.
Yeah. I'm thinking that the Toby the Demon looks like Toby from The Office.
I'm just trying to possess your girls. It's just my job.
But I just feel like the series fell off quite a bit from the second movie. What I'd like to see is for them to end it somehow, have either the daughter, who I can't remember her character's name, from the second movie kill the demon or expel it from Kagi or something.
Yeah, we need a conclusion to this franchise. Yeah. I mean, this demon is tormenting mankind, but eventually its reign has to come to an end.
We need to know what was the purpose of the coven, why the baby boy was taken, exactly the purpose of why the demons.
For those of you who are writing the fourth film, this is a checkbox that you are welcome to
checkbox,
use.
Checkbox. So. Can Kagi be saved? Can the demon be expelled from
Kagi? I like Kagi.
I do too. And why did they have to kill Mika? Because he was the best part of the whole franchise.
Mika was a terrible human being.
And this is a side point, maybe you could add this in. Our friend Nick had mentioned that the movie felt feminist to him. And if you think about it, in the series, all the men who try to figure out what's going on are killed horribly.
It's true.
by women.
I don't know if that makes it feminist or just anti, poking your head where it doesn't belong kind of thing.
So what I'd like to think is what the point of this franchise is: women are scary, and you gotta be afraid of, like, old women especially will kill you without a second thought.
And on that note,
lock up your grandmother. She may be a demon.
On that note, I think that brings us to the end of our discussion of Paranormal Activity 3. But Daniel, see it or don't see it? What do you think?
I say see it. If you like the first two movies, it's more of the same. There's some good scares. There's some good moments. If you like horror movies and haven't seen the first two, maybe give it a shot. See if you like the format.
Yeah, I believe the first one is actually on Netflix. Watch instantly.
Yeah, and watch the first one. The first one is by far the best.
Yeah, it's one of those. It's one of those ones that you watch in a dark house and it creeps you the hell out, like The Ring.
Like with some people, and you kind of freak out. You kind of react bigger than you normally would.
Yeah, you'll sleep a little creepier that night. It's very nice.
The door opens up in the middle of the night because I've had the door slam on me before, and I was like, demon.
You have two cats, Daniel. You have two cats. Anyway, thank you for visiting us at filmlock.net, and have a good night.